Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
WNYC.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and our theme today is music and food. Later on the show, I will dare to taste the true stew of doom, which comes from a heavy metal cookbook. Also, a pork belly bao. A bao is a Taiwanese steamed bun, and it's the specialty of Chef Eddie Wong. See, we spent a fun afternoon last week downstairs in the green space with Eddie Wong. He's owner of the East Village restaurant Bauhaus and author of the new memoir, Fresh Off the Boat, which tells about him growing up in a family of Taiwanese immigrants and finding his place in American society through hip-hop. The rapper Heems, who grew up in a family of Indian immigrants, also joined us downstairs to play a few songs. We started with a clip from Eddie Wong's Vice TV series, which is also called Fresh Off the Boat. And in this scene, Eddie, the huge hip-hop fan, is getting a lesson in, well, I'll say singing, from a couple of Taiwanese heavy metal kids.
Fossil fly, circle in the dark stars, poking carrion from the ground.
You need to add some distortion.
Vultures fly!
That's loud.
Yeah.
But you need distortion.
That's... Oh, I need a distortion.
Vultures fly!
Okay.
Vultures fly, circle in the dark stars, poking carrion from the ground.
Yeah, that's it!
Eddie Wong, welcome to Soundcheck.
What's up, what's up? It's good to be here. All right, my mic's just turned up.
What the hell was that?
Oh, that?
Yeah.
That was some Taiwanese death
black metal.
Yeah, black metal. But yeah, they really wanted to like break model minority myths too, so peace to the gods, you know? I'm glad they're doing their thing.
So that was actually you in Taiwan.
Yes.
Which
yes.
is, of course, where your family is
yes.
from.
Yes, and the Taiwanese thing about it was that they did that. They had a school to learn how to scream. You know, like they had a school to teach you how to do death metal, which I thought was like a very Asian approach to, you know.
No,
music.
No. There's. I mean, we've actually, you know, in the past on Soundcheck, we've had people, you know, who teach you how to do that screamy thing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because
learned the Suzuki method combined, like I think they were doing like the Suzuki method and the black metal together.
Yeah, no, but I mean, as you learned, that's a great way to blow out a vocal cord if you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, like I just can't imagine going to school for hip hop. Like, all right, swag, you know, that would be kind of strange.
Now, your family is originally from Taiwan, and you quote your dad in the book
yep.
as referring to the U.S. as the land of opportunity, free love, and the Bee Gees.
Yeah, and, you know...
That apple fell far from the tree, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the Bee Gees is one of the greatest karaoke groups of all time, I think. Like, them and Wham. Wham is a great karaoke group, too. So in Taiwan and China, they're very, very popular for that reason. And no, but my dad also got it twisted because the Bee Gees, they're like Australia and British.
And UK, yeah.
Yeah, he just related everything rock and roll America.
So, but your musical taste turned out to be quite different. So what was music like in the home? Was there music in the house?
My mom would play the wackiest like Chinese Qigong music. And it was literally like listening to birds in like desolate parts of China. Like, like that's basically what was going on like all the time in the house. And I kind of wanted to kill myself. We didn't even get to watch cartoons in the morning because my dad would karaoke at 8 a.m. Saturday morning. And we never got to watch Ninja Turtles. Like we'd have to, you know, watch it at somebody else's house or watch it recorded on VHS or something because he always took over the television to karaoke in the morning.
So how did you get into hip-hop?
You know, it's funny. Like, a lot of people ask because, obviously, like, I'm Chinese, so I understand why people ask. But for me, I never thought about it. I kind of was just in it. But if I had to explain it, I think it's because in America, you're sometimes given, like, a false choice between, like, white and black. And, you know, I never saw Asian people on TV besides, like, you know, Bruce Lee. I'd see Kung Fu The Legend Continues, but that dude was white.
Yep.
And then I'd watch, like, The Last Dragon, and I was like, I relate to them more than Kwai Chang Kang. And so, you know, he just went hip-hop, and it was funny. You know, I always imitated Michael when I was a kid, and I think for a lot of people, like...
Michael Jackson.
And, you know, I think a lot of 80s babies, you imitate Michael, and then it's, like, a movement towards hip-hop. But I tell people the story, because I lived in D.C., and we'd see Elm Street, and it was Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, and we were like, yo, that's our street, you know? And then DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince had Nightmare on My Street, and that was the first cassette tape I ever bought. I begged my mom. I was like, yo, you got to take me to Sam Goody or, like, The Wiz, you know, like, we got to cop that tape, and I copped it, and that was the first, like, tape I ever bought in my life.
It was a Saturday evening, if I remember it right, and we had just gotten back off tour last night. So the gang and I thought that it would be groovy if we summoned up the posse and dumb rushed the movies. I got Angie, Jeff got Tina, Ready Rock got some girl I've never seen in my life. That was alright though, cause the lady was chill. Then we dipped to the theater, set to Ill, buggin', Cole having a ball. And something about Elm Street was the movie we saw. The way it started was decent, you know, nothing real fancy about this homeboy named Fred and this girl named Nancy. But word, when it was over, I said, yo, that was death. And everything seemed all right when we left. But when I got home and laid down to sleep, that began the nightmare on my street.
And it was just on from there, you know? I definitely remember when I was a kid and in elementary school, I was really picked on all the time. People always made fun of me, but I had jokes and I would snap on people. So when I heard The Chronic and all they did was just
by Dr. Dre.
Yeah, they would just snap on Easy the whole time. I was like, yo, I really get down with these dudes.
Yeah. Now understand this, my homie Dre can't be touched.
Luke's bending over.
So Luke's getting stuck, Buster.
Buster thought I was sleazy. I thought I was a mark, cause I used to hang with Easy.
Animosity made you speak what you spoke. Hey, yo, Dre.
What up?
Break him off something, bro.
Yeah, that's what it is. I think you're presented with a false choice, and you know, I didn't really relate to a lot of dominant culture, and hip-hop was my thing. Like, it was the one thing that I saw in The Matrix that I could get down with.
Well, now, you talk in the book. I mean, the language in the book is like this funny kind of patois of English, a little smidgen of Chinese, but lots of hip-hop lyrics, lots of basketball lingo, you know, basketball references. And you talk about being in Orlando and being, like, at one point really aware that Orlando kept drafting white guys in the NBA draft.
Yeah.
So even as a kid, you were seeing that kind of choosing of sides, so to speak.
Because I was like, it's very clear who we should be taking. Do you know, it's very clear, like, we should draft Paul Pierce, but you went and got Michael Doliak. You know, like, it's very obvious who you should be drafting. I don't know. Like, I think actually Doliak got drafted after Pierce, but... I mean, the thing is in multiple drafts, I would see them, like, you took J.J. Redick, you know, they took Michael Doliak, they took Matt Harpring. You know, like, there was always, like, the Orlando Magic draft approach was, like, the same Utah Jazz draft approach, like, draft the best available white dude. And I always felt that that's what they did. Which is why I really liked the Knicks. The Knicks was always, like, just draft the most ratchet dude. Mm-hmm. Except when Ron Artest, they went Frederick Weiss was, like, the worst thing ever. So, yeah.
We're speaking with Eddie Wong, the chef and proprietor of Bauhaus in the East Village and author of the new memoir called Fresh Off the Boat. There's a term, you use it at one point here in the book, and in fact there's a Chinese pipa player here in New York named Min Xiao Fen. She's written a piece called ABC, American-born Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? Other than the obvious thing of being Chinese-born, I mean, there's a further meaning to it, right? You started off by using the term model minority, and I got the impression that it was sort of tied in with that.
Oh, no, I think ABC is a colloquial term that, you know, Chinese parents will call their children. It's actually a term, we don't own it. It's like, I don't like claiming ABC. That's what I am, you know? But, like, your parents will be like, oh, he's an ABC. Do you know what I mean? Like, when you hold your chopsticks in a funny way, like, that's when you'll hear ABC come out, you know? Or you don't hit, like, the right scales on the piano, like, oh, ABC.
So what is the model minority thing? What does that mean?
I mean, I think it's pretty much like you already know what time it is. It's like the people who are really just happy to be under the bamboo ceiling and really like they live that cubicle life, I think. And no offense to anybody who lives a cubicle life, but you know, I think that's like the modern Great Wall. For real, you know? I think I wrote that in the book.
You wrote a lot of stuff in the book. Yeah. A little of which I'd love it if you could read for us.
Cool.
This is a passage from Eddie Wong's Fresh Off the Boat. Do you need to set this up for us?
Oh, this is, well, you know, this is a passage from high school. My boy Warren lived across the street, was my best friend, and we kind of became friends over Wu-Tang. And the first thing he ever asked me, it was funny because I don't know if he had met a Chinese person before, and I was dressed the way I was dressed, like big basketball shorts and whatever. And I used to have like a half moon in my head or like racing stripes on the side. And he just looked at me once. And he's like, "Do you listen to Wu-Tang?" And I was like, "Yeah, man. Like, but thank you for stereotyping me, B. Like, thanks for calling me out on that." And we listened to hip hop together. But then he started dating this white chick down the street that drove this like red Toyota Celica. And then he started listening to like Modest Mouse and Incubus. And I wrote here, I said, "Dude went from Wu-Tang and Menace to Society soundtrack to Modest Mouse and Incubus. I wanted to puke in my mouth every morning listening to that. I started bringing my Discman in the whip just so I could avoid listening to songs about water and wine or whatever it was Incubus kept going on about. In the end, some people can only keep up the hip-hop thing so long. I think hip-hop is real for a lot of white and Asian kids, but there's a point of diminishing returns. That's when they make an upward assimilation. I didn't listen to hip-hop for strategic reasons. I loved it. I needed it. Watching my white and Asian friends move away from hip-hop opened my eyes to this rite of passage that I was never going to join, the ascendance into whiteness."
So you're a hip-hop fan for life. You're a lifer.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll tell you honestly, I don't consciously think about it. I've only consciously thought about it when, like, people ask me. Mm-hmm. But no lie, like, I've never had any black people, Puerto Rican people, Dominican people, Chinese people ever ask me about it. It's really like I think people from dominant culture like think it's kind of strange. And I always answer the question because I get it. You know, you get it. You see certain people do certain things. It's different. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like when I see a white dude speak Chinese, it's different. I ask him about it too. So it goes both ways, you know, but I never like, you know, when I'm in the hood or whatever, no one ever asked me. Like I run up in the Taft houses back in the day. Nobody ever asked me, you know?
Well, we were listening to some of your Spotify playlist here in the green space before yeah. Before going on the air.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's not just the hits. I mean, you're clearly, you know, still kind of crate diving, you know, digging for the newer emerging artists and stuff.
No, always, always.
And so is that what plays in the restaurant?
Yeah, in the restaurant we play a lot of goofy stuff. You know, like I'll play Young Jake Data Mosh.
I'm moshing data. Shout out to David O'Reilly. I got a max beat behind me. I'm doing me making gifts on the web writer rips. It's cool cause it's nerdy. Yeah. Data moshing cool. Data moshing great. Justin Bieber, I'm moving with my face. Then use it for an art show, use it for a piece. Project it on an apple, project it on a peach.
You know, we play a lot of different music. We play a lot of people's mixtapes, not even the like album music. People will drop off their own mixtapes or their mixes. So we always try to keep it bubbling. You know, I honestly tell people, like, don't play Doggy Style. Don't play The Chronic. Don't play, like, you know, Young MC Busta Move. Like, you already know, like, those, like, corny frat, like, college party, house party music jams. Like, I really don't play any of that, like, MTV Party to Go stuff. So, yeah.
So, were you, I mean, you know Heems, right?
Yeah. I met Heems at Bonnaroo. Yeah, we were both, yeah, we were, like, in the artist tent just doing what we do in the artist tent.
What do you do in the artist tent, Eddie?
We were just smoking weed looking at his panda shoes.
Okay.
He had these Jeremy Scott panda shoes on, and he's like, "Look, watch, I'm gonna put them back in the wilderness, B." And he threw them into the grass, and it's just like, I mean, I was blazed, so I thought it was really entertaining. So yeah, set them free, Heems. Let the pandas go. So I mean, that's kind of what happens.
Eddie Wong is with us.
Very, you know, highbrow
live
activity.
In the green space on Soundcheck. And that's the kind of storytelling that you get in spades in his new memoir called Fresh Off the Boat. It is a very entertaining read, and we'll talk more with Eddie in a moment. But having mentioned Heems, we should hear some music.
Yes, definitely.
Please welcome to the stage here at the Green Space, Heems and Dapwell.
Yeah.
Heems.
This is it, the late, late night. Can you turn the beat up? I ain't got love handles, got thug handles. My life a game of dice and me, I gamble. On the major deacon, I'm a major freakin'. Ballin' out with burgers like eight every weekend. But not just burgers, got some cheese on that bitch. Storing every slide cause I got disease in that bitch. Doctor said hit my shoe, watch your cholesterol. I said doctor please, man please, just let me ball. I'm just kicking it, crown fried chicken it. Finger looking good, so my fingers I be licking it. KFC for Kennedy. Unhealthily, but let it be. My junk food game is of another pedigree. You a guy, bro. Me, I'm a guy, bro. Anything tastes better with adobo or sazo. Mountain Dew Extreme, so I do me. Tune out with latest Skittles and that juice that's fruity. I don't want to wait. I don't want to wait for my life to be over. So I do now. I don't want to wait. I don't want to wait for my life to be over. So I do now. I don't want to wait. My life to be over. So I do it now.
That's the rapper Heems performing the song Thug Handles live in the Green Space. Coming up, we'll talk with him, and we'll hear more from Eddie Wong, the chef and author of the new memoir Fresh Off the Boat, in just a moment. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We're listening back to a visit from the chef Eddie Wong of the East Village restaurant Bauhaus and the rapper Heems. They both joined us on stage in the green space last week. And you can watch the full video on our website, soundcheck.org. Heems, you were part of that Dosa Hunt film, right?
Yeah.
Which, you know, we did a segment on that a little while ago, had a couple of the guys in. What did that feel like to be scouring the city and sort of going into a part of your culinary heritage?
That was cool. Dosa Hunt's a film I produced and I was in with Dap and who else? It was Alan from Neon Indian and Amrit from Stereo Gum and Vijay Iyer and Anand from Yesair. And it was Rostam from Vampire Weekend. It was a bunch of basically brown musicians in a van going to eat dosa in different parts of New York. And
dosa is like a
dosa is a
pancake.
South Indian. Yeah, it's kind of like a crepe, but with potatoes inside. Right. And yeah, there's a lot of good food in Queens.
Yeah, and you know we had some of the dosa that you guys brought in, and a lot of them were sort of not traditional. You know, there was like avocado and all kinds of weird stuff.
Yeah, I mean, even in India, when I was there like 2 years ago, they have dosa with noodles inside, like Chinese noodles. So they do a lot of stuff with them, yeah.
So do you worry about authenticity?
No.
What about you, Eddie?
Yeah, no, I think Heems raised a really good point here. Like, I've been, you know, I don't use the word authenticity anymore. It's a recent thing because I realized, like, people were not understanding what I was saying. My thing is more about cultural soft power and who controls the messaging on your culture and the soft power that you have. Because that's the way, like, you know.
Can you explain what soft power is?
Yeah, soft power is the export. Like, people, that's the new way that people are fighting. You know, that's how the civilizations clash now. Is over soft power, you know, your movies, your music, your cultural exports, and things like that. I think that, like, when I go to Taiwan, it's the same way. You'll see food items like a dosa or a bao, and people are freaking it out. But this is the difference, is that they're freaking it out and doing new things with it, but it's for that palate. It's for that region. When I can't speak for Heems, as myself, as a Taiwanese or Chinese kid, seeing somebody freak out a food item, but when it's like for the West Village, I'm just like, that's, to me, that's not the movement, you know, because you could cater to them, but everybody's already catering to that palate. You know, that when you cater to dominant culture, you're just basically like sacrificing your things to them. And I feel like there's some things that should be, left for the people that came with it.
Well, that's why I'm asking whether, you know, stuff like avocado belong in dosa or Chinese noodles.
It's
or whatever.
A good question too. Like, you know, same with music, right? Experimenting with music is fantastic, but when you experiment with music in a way like Diddy did in the late '90s, like that's, and you're just serving it up and you're kind of bastardizing the culture, that's not what I'm about, you know. But I don't try to talk about it as authenticity anymore. I try to talk it with the lens of power. Because that's how that argument should be understood. And it's not about race as much as, like, serving the people who brought this and the culture and, like, what it grew out of.
Yeah. Heems, you've, in some of your mixtapes, you've sort of used a lot of sampled sounds of traditional Indian music. Is that kind of getting into the area that Eddie was just talking about?
I mean, people are already sampling Indian music for rap music. I guess it is kind of... not so much a matter of authenticity or laying claim to it, but just wanted to kind of do that more and more kind of focused than other people. But, you know, you have like Truth Hurts and Dr. Dre and Eric Sermon sampling Indian music in the 90s.
He breaks me down. He built me up.
I guess in a way, you know, Dap has this story where these kids were kind of poking fun at him for listening to rap music and were like, why don't you listen to Indian music? And then there was this wave of Indian samples in rap music that happened, and it was kind of this moment where we were like, ha, you know, like, you guys like this stuff, you know. And
yeah, didn't Ron Brown use it for Nori too?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's just there's tons of, you know, even, I mean, I was talking to LP about how he might have used the first Indian sample with Company Flow on that record.
Check. Added on digital slash for what I'm worth alongside four terrible surgeons who blur common perspectives on what and how to get lit. That flaming Molotov. Unstoppable object hits a movable wall and space split. This rogue cherub got his own twisted agenda. Catch that. Walking on flat lines, you witness me grow way beyond corporate control. Let them eat cake as I introduce myself as a mistake. Slip through the quills with a serrated raw staff. Sharp in the gut. Now we can all become Lord of the Flies when this industry sees its demise.
I mean, it's existed within the culture for a long time, so I can't pretend that I started that.
Yeah, and then there was that whole Asian massive movement in the 90s, you know, where Indian, traditional Indian instruments like the tabla turned into electronic dance music and stuff.
Right, that was heavy more in the UK and stuff. And for me as an artist, I mean, I always looked at the UK coming up and was kind of jealous of what they had, because as a South Asian artist or musician, there was much more of a scene over there. I mean, you know, it was because there was a longer history of South Asians there, and politically they had more kind of to speak out against, and, you know, they had a lot more right-wing extremists over there, and, you know, stuff like the Southall riots in the 70s. And
so there's more to push back against.
Yeah, so, I mean, there was a lot more need for art as a means to kind of express, you know, their discontent with the government. Right. And so there wasn't really much of that as a South Asian here, because most of the South Asians that came here between 65 and 75 were masters and PhDs. And so, you know, we didn't really, our ride in America, and it's something I acknowledge as a South Asian, was a pretty easy one, you know, and especially making rap music, which is, you know, historically a black art form. I think it's important to mention, like, the experience of South Asians in this country isn't anything near as, you know, as tough as what black people go through with the American government.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that, like, you look at Wu-Tang, right? When Wu-Tang took, like, Chinese kung fu movie samples and sounds like that, that never bothered me at all, because that's, you're not serving that up to dominant
that
culture.
That was cool, right? Yeah. Wasn't that cool for you?
It was amazing.
Style is immensely strong and immune to nearly any weapon. When it's properly used, it's almost invincible.
Bro, I'm going to give it to you with no trivia. Olivia. Roll like cocaine straight from Bolivia. My hip hop will rock and shock the nation like the Emancipation Proclamation. Weak MCs approach with slang that's dead. Them eyes are running to the wall and bang your head. I'm pushing force, my force you're doubting. I'm making devils cower to the Caucasus Mountain.
Well, I'm Messiah. I set the microphone on fire. Rap styles vary and carry like Mariah. I come from the Shaolin slum, and the alley I'm from is coming through with enough guns.
That was like one of the first moments in my childhood where I was like, yo, we might could bubble up right now. Like, this might be our moment. You know, like, I'm going to dust off these cotton kung fu shoes right now. But
and
no,
then,
that
and
was
when
huge.
Jin came out.
Yo, Jin, I used to run home from school to watch Jin on 106 and Park.
You ain't a reggae artist, and I ain't hating on you. Stop lying, Miss Cleo is more Jamaican than you. I'm nice with it when I'm freeing. Who you think you being? My pants are new, my sweater is new. Don't be mad at Chinese kid dressed better than you. Man, I'm freestyling now, it's a rap. Matter of fact, you should ask Clef how to make your flow tighter. Better yet, pay him 20 G's to be a ghostwriter. I'm nice when I'm freeing, you ain't beating me. Matter of fact, I'll be at buffets, and you ain't eating me. Don't make me start rapping in Chinese on the microphone. They final pay love, that means take your sorry butt home.
Like, Jin was huge. I emailed Jin when the book dropped to be like, yo, like...
He's out in Hong Kong, like, he's like a Christian.
Oh,
he's
back,
right?
Here now. He came back. He just came back. Yeah, he came back. But, you know, the thing I would say is, you know, I definitely agree with what he was saying. Like, you have to... This is a black cultural art form, and you never forget it. And but I think that people that aren't part of dominant culture... Like, we all share this. Like, I love Jamaican Chinese food. You know, like, I love that. I love Cuban Chinese food. I like Peruvian, you know, Japanese food. Like, I like the sharing of these things. But it's you know, like, there's dominant culture that has all that power. And I'm not just talking white people. I'm talking whiteness, but also in China. Like, you know, there's that dominant culture that's being fed there in China as well. And in every country, in every city, there is a dominant culture. And it's just you don't want your things served up to those gods. And
right.
And last thing on what Hema said, because it's very deep, is that even though, you know, you can't compare anything to the Black American experience. Like, you can't. But I do think that people have kind of used it in a way. Dominant culture has been like, oh, well, you guys have it okay. You're model minorities. But there's still a lot of things that we struggle with. And it's imperfect. The experience is imperfect. And yeah. And until it's something that isn't imperfect, like, I think we should speak up about it, and I think you do.
We're speaking with Eddie Wong, the chef and proprietor of Bauhaus in the East Village and author of the new memoir Fresh Off the Boat, and with the rapper Heems from the group Das Racist, which may or may not be kaput at this point. You are going to do this song Soup Boys. The video for that has a lot of reference to drone warfare and stuff.
Yeah, the song too, yeah.
I guess I was sort of wondering how drone warfare works into the kind of the feeling of the song. At one point, you shout out to Richmond Hill, hanging with people.
Yeah, that song's kind of about, on two levels. I mean, it's about being brown in America, and kind of I wrote it after there were the Sikh temple shooting, and it kind of speaks to the paranoia of being brown in America post 9/11, and kind of. To a certain extent, kind of using alcohol and drugs to deal with that kind of paranoia. And then I wanted to talk about it on a larger level and tie that, you know, personal feeling to a global level in which drone attacks and being brown in the world is also kind of has its own paranoia that's akin to the American experience.
So in the spirit of thinking globally and acting locally, you bring that back to your home neighborhood, Richmond Hill in Queens, which is where I grew up as well.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
I remember we spoke about that last time. And you spoke about horses. You like you go to the aqueduct, you watch horse racing sometimes?
I'm surprised you remembered.
Yeah.
I kind of thought you were walking out of here that night and the next morning you weren't going to remember anything, but I guess I was wrong.
I give off that impression sometimes, but I always know exactly what's going on.
All right. And for the record, not so much Aqueduct, more Belmont and Saratoga.
Belmont, okay, gotcha.
We're live in the green space on Soundcheck with Heems and Dapwell. Here's another song called Soup Boys.
Here's another rap song. It goes like this. Indian jersey and an ohm on my necklace. Outside Van Buren, I'm parked in a Lexus. I'm waiting for the man, I'm waiting for a gram. I'm waiting for the man to put a gram up in my hand. And I'm looking fresh, you'll never find a flyer steez. Yo, I'm in Richmond Hill, smoking with the Guyanese. Trini's getting higher than a mother fire gear. Punjabi's wild, yo, Himanshu is the Shire man. They throwing stones at the mosque. I'm in tomb with goons that stoned at the mosque. I'm in the zone, throwing stones with my box. You eating stones, I'm seeing drones up top. Like that drone, cool, but I hate that drone. Chocolate chip cookie dough in a sugar cone. Drones in the morning, drones in the night. I'm trying to find a pretty drone to take home tonight. That drone, cool, but I hate that drone. Chocolate chip cookie dough in a sugar cone. Drones in the morning, drones in the night. I'm trying to find a pretty drone to take home. Timberlands on, polo rugby on my back. I'm outside John Bound, I'm parked in the act. I'm waiting for Jay, cause Jay got the gay. And when I see Jay, all my problems go away. Now I'm drinking with my cousins, bars be bum brushing. Drinking white Russians with Russians just flushing. Like we could tussle if they look at my cousins, girl. Yo, yo, you couldn't last a day in the world. Ruben and Carlos, Corona, tape up. If they talk about us, they about to get shaked up. Wake up, I'm listening for them to say Hindu. But no problem, them not do like Hindu. Yo, I'm stoned at my parents' house. White boys throwing stones at my parents' house. They got busting, hate crime, race war. I'm high as space dog, wild as 3K4s. That drone cool, but I hate that drone. Chocolate chip cookie dough in a sugar cone. Drones in the morning, drones in the night. I'm trying to find a pretty zone to take home tonight. I'm rocking Nikes, Time Court, Motorola, in front of Cardozo, in the Toyota Corolla, cup holder, Coca-Cola, backseat stroller, backstreet stroller, hash tree roller, chole batura eater, heater holder, he the chosen heathen, he honing and hold on for ransom, yo, my temple look like the mansion, in the center we be praying, we be dancing, on the boulevard, right on Casino. Yeah, we roll the green up from Mecca to Medina. Yeah, they throwing stones at the temple. Got me going mental like that drone modest. But that drone front and all of them drones do what them drones want. Drones want a wild and drones want to kill. Drones want your home and your dome and your crib. That drone cool, but I hate that drone. Chocolate chip cookie dough in a sugar cone. Drones in the morning, drones in the night. I'm trying to find a pretty drone to take home tonight.
That's Heems and Dapwell with Soup Boys, and live from the Green Space, you're listening to Soundcheck. We can take some questions from you folks here in the hall. There's a microphone position right here where you can line up and ask questions of either Eddie or Heems or both. Heems, you did a couple of mixtapes last year. What's the plan for this year?
Maybe an album.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty focused right now on my record label. I manage and put out an artist named Leaf who dropped a mixtape on Monday called Fly Zone. You guys should get it. And
Eddie, have you heard Leaf?
No, I haven't. Oh, but I will.
Check it out, Eddie.
I'm going to check it out.
I'll email it to you later today.
I will download that.
Thank you.
I don't know if virtuosity and speed are necessarily your thing, Eddie, but he is amazing.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, he's awesome. And then in February, an artist named Antoine has a project called In Dark Denim I'm releasing. And then an artist named Lacutus and an artist named Safe who also releases this year. So he's kind of busy with that.
No wonder you look so tired.
Yeah, right.
All right.
Pretty hard on me today, man.
Heems, Eddie Wong here with me on stage at the Green Space. You're listening to Soundcheck. Let's take some questions.
I have a quick question for Eddie about you talked about the transition of people transitioning out of hip hop and you didn't do that. Do you have any thoughts about the transitions within hip hop and how have you sort of watched this culture grow as you've grown with it?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because, you know, the one thing I'm not in the camp with is people that are always reminiscing on how good the golden era was, you know, and I thought the golden era was like early 2000s when Dipset was out, you know, like
and Ruckus Records.
Sound Bombing too, you know, and you know, people won't say it now, but I'll say it, like when 50 first came out, like everyone was excited, you know, like 50's first mixtapes, and then they had the Black Wall Street mixtapes and all the Dipset mixtapes, Sycamore. But I think hip hop is really interesting. You know, the two periods that I really wasn't the biggest fan of was like the Diddy, you know, the Shiny Suit period, and then when I thought that streetwear was really popping, people had that thing like, oh, we're gonna sign all the hipster rappers, you know, like we want Lupe, we want skinny jean rappers and things like that. And I think it's just funny how when people react too fast and they're looking for the look and the packaging as opposed to like the music and the actual like big movements. So, but I think we're in a great period right now. Like, there's a lot of New York MCs popping. Like Action is popping, French is popping. So I'm happy, you know, ASAP. So I really think hip hop is in a good space, and it's not something that's gonna go away.
And one more quick thing, you talked about like not being able to see a lot of people that looked like you when you was growing up and seeing the culture. Like, you talked about Jen. You have any other people? Like, I'm thinking along lines like Illmind, like as a producer. Anybody else you look towards? Like, oh man, it's great that somebody looks like me is really participating and has like a big stage in this culture.
Yeah, Illmind is mad cool, and I was such a head that even in 05, I used to go to Nightingale on 12th Street or whatever, and Illmind would used to do like open mic there, and I'd go peep that. And I go there, and Illmind is great. He was on Cruel Summer, and he comes to Bauhaus now, so that's real cool. You know, when you saw Jin, when Jeremy Lin was mad cool too, you know, until he bounced. He bounced, but...
Give us your name before your question. That actually was, I happen to know that was Patrick, our first questioner.
I'm Margaret, and I was wondering if you could talk about the relationship between rap and food. I'm thinking from, like, Fat Boys all the way to Combination Pizza Hut Taco Bell.
I mean, you know, in a certain way, rapping is like, you know, folk music, and you talk about what you do in the mundane, and you have three verses with 16 bars. There's a lot of talking, so you end up talking about, you know, everything, whether it's something as simple as brushing your teeth or whether it's eating or sleeping or, you know, of course, then like money and sex and things like that. But, I mean, in those three verses of 16 bars, yeah, you end up talking about food, but... I don't think it's any different than, you know, the number of things you would talk about in a rap song.
I do think that it is, it's ill, like that you say, hip-hop, a lot of it is about the mundane, about the everyday. It's like, it's Seinfeld music, I guess, right? In a funny way.
All right, next question.
Yo, what's up?
My
name's Aaron. What up, Eddie? What up, Heems? You're both professional inspirations to me, actually, because I'm a young cook who also raps. I had to put that out there. I guess my question is, like, as someone who just started cooking and is, like, you know, working in Brooklyn, I'm in a space where it's, like, you know, it's gentrified territory, and I'm not from here, but, you know, I identify with my community. I've lived there for quite a long time, and I've just been wondering, you know, if you guys have any, I guess, suggestions about how you kind of represent your culture and bring it into that space. You talked about soft power. To bring people into your culture but not really sell it out. You know, I'm thinking more on the food side too, because what I try to do is kind of like soul food, but like, you know, in a healthy sense.
Does that mean soul food without lard?
It might be some like free range pig lard. It really depends, but we try to keep it on the olive oil.
No, tip. I like that. I like that. No, you know, I wouldn't think about it in a mechanical way. The most important thing, at least to me with Bauhaus, is I didn't think about it in a mechanical way. No matter what you do, if you don't think about it and you just do you, you're idiosyncratic, like as an individual. If you just let it go and you shoot the fair one, your restaurant and everything about it will be you, and it'll be authentic to you, and it'll represent what you're from and all the people you've met. Like, just intuitively and inherently, it'll happen. So I think what happens and when people sell it out is when they think too much about like who they're serving. You know, like, just do you. Like, make your restaurant like your apartment. Like, mine looks like a basement. And we just put up weird things, like cut out people out of Hoop magazine, and it looks like a serial killer's letter, but it's funny.
I don't know. When you're an artist, I mean, you have to get used to the fact that you're making something, you know, about yourself or for yourself, but you're releasing it, and then it becomes for people and for them to comment on and for them to critique. And so, you know, when I'm creating music or art, I've already dealt with putting all of myself into it and having people take it. So in terms of how much of your culture do you let people into, I don't think too much about it. But my culture is obviously a huge part of me, and I'm putting myself into the work.
So in essence, the same thing that Eddie was saying, you don't overthink it.
Yeah,
it's just,
no.
You know, it's whatever
it's
is there.
It's who I am. And, yeah. And my thing isn't so much how do I, you know, prevent people from, you know, from the culture, but more myself as a person. Yeah.
All right. Another question.
Hi, my name is Chelsea, and my question's for Eddie. Where does your inspiration come from to open your own restaurant, and like, when did you start opening it?
Yeah, to be honest, I went through multiple outlets, right? I was a stand-up comic, I was an attorney, I was, you know, doing all kinds of other things. I did streetwear for a minute, and I was just looking for outlets, for ways to speak. But I realized, like, Americans, like, they love combo number five. Do you know, like, we are known for food. Like, we're expected to be good at food in this country. And I was like, you know what? I can rock. Like, I make very good food. And I was like, if I make food that's delicious and people like what we're doing, then they'll probably listen to what I have to say. And that's why I did it. You know, I love food, but it was really so that we could talk about the things we talked about today.
All right, last question.
Hi, my name is May. Can either you or Heems recommend any Asian hip-hop artist? Because I love Asian hip-hop, besides Jin, Heems, whatever.
Sure, you should check out this dude, Cool Calm Pete, from a couple years back. He was really cool.
Yeah, no, Cool Calm's dope. And the thing people don't know, Cool Calm, like, he designed a lot of Supreme.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, Supreme, and he was cool at Polo for a while. And he busts
a lot of people in NBA 2K. Like, for real, Cool Calm, I heard, busts a lot of people in NBA 2K.
You heard it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for your questions, and thank you all for joining us today. I'd like to thank Eddie Wong, the chef and proprietor of Bauhaus, the East Village restaurant, for feeding us here in the green space today. His new book is called Fresh Off the Boat. And the rapper Heems, along with Dapwell. Guys, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you both so much.
Like the moral of the story is calling me. With silly pranks like you ain't gonna win, kid. This game is bugged, these kids done jinxed it. Fix these plans, I got hopes and dreams, son. Rolling downhill and the year has just begun. I seen America lonely with its card. Hello, wrote this on the back of a greeting card. From this bleeding.
That's a track called Lost from the rapper that Heems and Eddie both mentioned a moment ago, Cool Calm Pete. If you enjoyed what you heard, there's more music and conversation on our website, and you can watch the full video at soundcheck.org. Coming up, Culinary Secrets of the Heavy Metal World. We'll talk with a French-Canadian foodie who compiled delicious recipes from scary musicians. This is Soundcheck. Come on, feet. I'm just trying to make a little bit of history. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We spent the first part of the show talking about hip-hop and food. Now we turn to another genre. The veteran metal band Anthrax is known for making loud and fast music. You're hearing their 1987 classic, Caught in a Mosh, in the background. But did you know Anthrax can also make stuffed cabbage? It's true. Annick Giroux is an aspiring young chef from Quebec who compiled recipes from some of her favorite bands for a book called Hellbent for Cooking, The Heavy Metal Cookbook. She joined us by phone from Montreal back in 2010, and I started out by asking her, where did the idea for the book come from?
Well, I'm a big heavy metal fan, and I love to eat, so it was basically putting my two passions into one book.
And so what did you do? You sent out letters to your favorite metal bands. Did you have any idea if any of them knew anything about cooking?
No, there's a few of them that I knew enjoyed cooking, but most of them, it was just out of the blue. I would send them emails or MySpace messages or handwritten letters, and mm-hmm. most of them, they were really positive about it.
So you got 101 recipes.
Yeah, that's right.
Did you make all of these?
Most of them, yeah. Some the bands made them themselves, but mm-hmm. I made like 97% of the recipes in there.
Now, do you know whether, in fact, the people from these bands actually make these recipes, or is this just like, you know, how do you know they didn't just Google on, you know, get something off the internet and send it to you?
That's a great question. I actually Googled each recipe to make sure that it was the band's own. But some of them were, and I had to return to the band and say, hey, this is not original.
Yeah. Although when it comes to stuff like a beef stew, I mean, what's original? You know, there's just so much you can do. And there are a couple of interesting stew recipes. It seems like you've gotten a real array of responses from these bands. There's the real cheap and quick kind of macaroni against monotheism, which is which is basically just macaroni and sauce, to the things that take over 24 hours to prepare, like the whiskey demon bacalao, a fish dish from Faustkoven. Do you have favorites from these?
Oh, yeah, I have. I could name you a few that I really like.
Mm-hmm.
I love the mummified jalapeno bacon bombs.
Who gave you that?
That was from Autopsy, which is a death metal band from the States.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the habanero gyudon, which is a Japanese spicy meal.
Mm-hmm.
Steak tartare.
Always a favorite. I mean, steak tartare, potentially scary, seems somehow appropriate for a heavy metal cookbook.
Exactly. It's like one of the most metal recipes I've got in there.
Now, you mentioned this band Autopsy. They contributed the recipe for mummified jalapeno bacon bombs.
Yes.
This is a little bit of their music. Autopsy. The song has the appetizing title of Twisted Mass of Burnt Decay. You'll want to try their mummified jalapeno bacon bombs. The recipe's in the book called Hellbent for Cooking, the Heavy Metal Cookbook, along with churrasco in soy sauce, a traditional Brazilian dish from the Brazilian metal band Sepultura. From Brazil, music by Sepultura and their recipe, churrasco in soy sauce. And from north of the border, from the band Anvil, subject of the hit documentary Anvil, The Story of Anvil, they contributed a recipe for thundering beef brisket. So those are just some of the bands who've contributed recipes to Anik Giraud's book, Hellbent for Cooking, the Heavy Metal Cookbook. Anik, were there any surprises? I mean, were you surprised at how traditional some of these recipes were?
Not really, because my main goal was to provide real recipes from bands, so that was what I was aiming for. But I was mostly surprised that some of the bands that contributed, like Mayhem, for example, you know, they're like a black metal band, and most of the time they're very conservative and very serious.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a huge surprise for me, and it was really exciting.
And what did Mayhem contribute?
They contributed actually one of my favorites from the book. It's a lamb and cabbage stew called farikal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a national Norwegian meal. So it's like their main meal that represents their country.
Now there are some other recipes that are quite, let's say, adventurous. The band Master's Hammer contributed a recipe for bull testicle surprise. I didn't even want to finish reading the recipe. Did you actually make or try bull testicle surprise?
Yes.
And?
Actually, I tried the sheep version because the bull testicles are hard to find in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And it tasted like a liver a little bit with a sheep aftertaste. It's quite special.
There are also a couple of recipes that call for ingredients that would be hard to find, perhaps legally, in this country. There's one that calls for pork blood and two that call for cannabis. What do you do with those?
Well, I don't do drugs myself, so I made the recipes with tea.
With tea?
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, some people that, you know, they have contacts, they could make them themselves.
Well, and I should say that in your book you specify medicinal quality cannabis.
Yes, yes. So that's legal.
I guess if you have glaucoma, you have access to all of the recipes in the book.
That's right.
The book is Hellbent for Cooking, the Heavy Metal Cookbook, and our soundcheck producer Joel Meyer actually spent all last night slaving over a hot stove to make one of the dishes from your book, Anik. It's the
really the
stew of true doom.
Oh, that's one of my favorites. It's so good.
Anik, that's like the fifth time you've said that's one of my favorites.
I know, but I love food. What can I say?
All right. I have not tried this yet, although Joel has brought a bowl of it into the studio, and it smells mighty fine. And this comes from the Indianapolis-based metal band called The Gates of Slumber. Before we try the stew, let's try the music. Eye of Mars, from the album Hymns of Blood and Thunder by the band The Gates of Slumber. You wouldn't expect beef stew from a band like this, but Joel Meyer, this is what you found in Anik's book.
That's right. How could I resist a recipe that's called the Stew of True Doom? You take a comfort food, something that grandma used to make, and then add a sort of a doomsday quality to it. I wanted to find out for myself what that would taste like.
Now, I mean, I have to say this tastes really good. But it tastes like beef stew. What is the element of doom? Is there anything in the recipe that would add that certain frisson of apocalypse?
Anik and John, I'm going to tell you, it's really just beef stew when it comes down to it. In the preparation, I think it's fairly traditional beef stew. However, it does come with some special instructions, and that's one of the other reasons that I selected this particular recipe to make. First of all, you should drink a strong ale when consuming it.
Hang on. Okay.
There you go. Also, you should listen to Holy Diver by Dio. You've been down too long in the midnight sea. Oh, what's becoming of me? Ride the tiger. You can see his stripes, but you know he's clean. Oh, don't you see?
All right, well, Ronnie James Dio's Holy Diver, paired with Dale's Pale Ale and Joel Meyer's Beef Stew, or, I'm sorry, the Stew of True Doom from the band
exactly.
Gates of Slumber. So is this like, not that I'm expecting that you're a dyed-in-the-wool stew maker, Joel, but, you know, you brown the beef first, yeah. You add wine, you add your vegetables.
Here's what I didn't know. I'm not much of a cook, John. I didn't know that this recipe was going to take 3 hours to make, and so I kind of wrapped this one up at about 1 in the morning, and that was after having set Pandora on the Dio channel, which just, you know, shuffles through Dio, Judas Priest, Danzig, Ozzy, all the hits. It was a great night of cooking. My wife might tell you a different story, however.
I'm afraid you're not getting OT for this either. Staying up till 1 in the morning.
I'm taking my stew back.
So the book, Anik, is called Hellbent for Cooking, The Heavy Metal Cookbook. Is there something about heavy metal musicians that would make this different from if you had done the Middle of the Road cookbook or the Power Pop cookbook? Or is it just all in the way it's presented? Is it the naming and the presentation?
It's there's the presentation, but there's also the fact that metalheads, we have a certain lifestyle. We go to concerts and we need to save money for beer and stuff like this, and records.
For the important things in life, yes, I understand.
Exactly. So, there are some recipes in there that are cheaper for students and that are easy for metalheads, like common metalheads, to do. Mm-hmm. And also there's some recipes in there that represents the bands. So this is what makes them different from,
you know,
let's
say, and there is, Anik, a really touching recipe in the book. You got two recipes from the Irish band Thin Lizzy,
yeah,
including one from the late Phil Lynott's mom.
Yeah.
What did she give you?
She gave me a Sunday lamb brunch roast, Sunday roast, which is a lamb roast by, it's her son's favorite recipe, and it's a traditional Irish meal.
Mm-hmm. And she didn't rename it the demonic Sunday brunch lamb roast or anything like that?
No, I actually, it came handwritten, and I just copied exactly like I received it.
Well, Anik, the book looks great, and from what I've tasted of the beef stew, it tastes pretty good, too. It's called Hellbent for Cooking, The Heavy Metal Cookbook by Anik Giraud. Anik, thanks so much for spending some time with us on Soundcheck this afternoon.
It was really fun.
Tomorrow on Soundcheck, we have a special live session with Richard Thompson, 2 p.m. tomorrow on our website, soundcheck.org. At 9 o'clock, we hear about the documentary Beware of Mr. Baker, about the famous and reclusive and volatile drummer Ginger Baker, and a live performance from the band Kishibashi. That's going to do it for today's show. I'm John Schaefer. See you back here tomorrow night at 9 for another Soundcheck.